Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Download our free course, Profit for Small Firm Architects, at entrearchitect.com/free course. You're listening to Entree Architect Podcast, and this is episode 163. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. I encourage each and every one of you to share your knowledge, share what you know. When we share with other architects, we all benefit and we all learn from one another. Our community will thrive and the profession will grow. When I first launched Entree Architect Podcast back on December 12, 2012, one of my primary goals was to provide a platform for other small firm architects, entrepreneur architects, to share their story. And after 162 episodes, I have certainly succeeded with that goal. Well, this week, with this episode, I'm launching a new series called The Entrepreneur Architect, where I will be interviewing you, members of the Entree Architect community. I want to know your story. I want to give you an opportunity to share some of your knowledge. Each guest will share their story and then answer a series of questions that will help them provide value to you, the listeners of our show. So let's do this. Let's get to know our first guest on the series, The Entrepreneur Architect, Michelle Grace Huddle. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is sponsored by NCARB, helping architects reach their career goals. Explore your options today at ncarb.org, ncarb.org. And TrueStyle, the leader in high-end architectural interior doors. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/TrueStyle. That's T-R-U-S-T-I-L-E. And FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, and track your time. Learn more at freshbooks.com/architect. Michelle Grace Huddle, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Hi, Mark. It's great to finally meet you after, 2 years of blogging, right?
Yeah, exactly. We've been following each other for a long time on social media and through the ArchiSpeak, the ArchiTalks blog
yes.
series. Let me tell people a little bit about you. Michelle has been practicing architecture with her own firm, Michelle Grace Huddle Architects, since 1994. and is licensed in California and Texas. She's a commissioner and subject matter expert for California Architects Board and the City of La Mesa Planning Commissioner. As an active member of the Architalk blog series, you can read her blog, I Never Met a Woman Architect Before, The Trials and Tribulations of Being a Woman Architect, Wife, and Mother, which I love the name of your blog. You can find that at INMA, as in I Never Met A, so INMA, womanarchitect.blogspot.com, and we'll have a link to that on the show notes as well. And let's start, Michelle, with your origin story. Let's sort of go back in time, where you discovered architecture, what inspired you to become an architect, and give us your story, your journey to where you find yourself today.
Okay, Mark. Going way back, I always liked drawing. I mean, from a very young age, probably 3 or something like that. And then at four when I have an October birthday, so I had to kind of have a little test for getting into kindergarten. So
what date in October?
October 27th.
Okay, my son is October 3rd. I wanted to check.
Yeah. So it was October 27th, and so I went to the school and I met with the school psychologist. And one of the questions he said was like, "Oh, draw a picture of a person." And I actually drew a picture of him. And, he thought that was pretty funny. and he went and took it over to the principal's office like immediately. And I guess they thought that I wasn't too weird because they let me into kindergarten. So and probably, I really enjoyed drawing in kindergarten. And then in first grade, everybody had art and music class at our school. I grew up in a small suburb outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 1 square mile, called Dormont. And the teacher asked, the art teacher said, "Oh, would you like to come with some other students to my house on the weekends?" On Saturdays to have art classes. And, I asked my parents and they said, sure. So that was like in first grade.
Wow.
And, I think I really just, math was never my thing. I've always enjoyed, English and the sciences, the humanities, but, that was really kind of a way that, I really felt accepted, I guess. I think that was a good beginning to be encouraged. If a teacher sees a talent, in a child, to really kind of explore that and encourage that with them. So, I was always drawing and painting and other things. We had a really good arts program in Pittsburgh then. I don't know what it's like now. probably in the eighth grade, I took a drafting class, because in the eighth grade they actually switched it over that both sexes had to be, they couldn't be separated. So, before that, wood shop was only taken by the boys and home ec was only by the girls. That seems insane.
Imagine that today.
Yes, exactly. So it's like a lot of people, they talk about feminism and, I don't need to be a feminist. I mean, I consider myself to be not that old. I mean, I'm 52. So I think that people really have to like look back to see how things were before. none of the seventh graders, so the guys that I was with, they didn't have to do home ec in seventh grade because they only changed this was when I was in eighth grade, but I actually got to do wood shop but it also included drafting. So I drafted something. And then also in eighth grade, we had a health class and we were supposed to, pick our career in eighth grade.
Right. So right. The rest of your life determine it.
Yeah. Yeah, at age 12. Yeah, I guess I was age 12 or something. So I picked three things. One of them was art, an artist. The second one was an architect. And then because there was so much math involved, and, you know, I could see all of the math that was going to be, you know, what classes I had to take to be an architect, I also put drafter. So when I went into high school, I took art, I think, in ninth grade. But then in 10th grade, they had a drafting class that also included some architectural drafting. So I did that. And then in 11th and 12th grade, we could go half the day to regular high school and then half a day to a technical school that was in the area that all the high schools were kind of feeding into. So I took, for 2 years you went there, and it was called mechanical drafting and design, or design technology or something like that. So I drafted there. So that was really, you know, and because I didn't have time in high school to really do any art classes, I was also taking art classes on Saturday at the Art Institute of Pittsburgh. They had a Saturday teen art program there from like 9 to 12 on Saturday morning. So I guess that really kind of prepared me for architecture school, where we're going to have to do a lot of work. We moved to California, and I started going, we weren't residents of California, so I started going to the community college for 2 years and then transferred to Cal Poly Pomona, and went to Cal Poly Pomona for second and third year. And then there's a program that we have, the international program in California. You can go abroad for a year. And you still pay the same amount as in-state tuition. So that's a really good deal. They still have that program. And I went there. I went to Denmark. And then, you know, I had my fifth year back at Cal Poly. And then I started working for a woman architect in Santa Monica for a few years. Then went back home for kind of that idle year, you know, the economy that by the time it was, so I graduated in 88, you know, it was around 88, 89, you know, we were kind of, in a recession. Yeah. So, as we have been several times, then I went back, you know, I worked for my stepdad who he's a design engineer, and he asked me if I wanted to do the tenant improvement on my on his office that he was working for. So I did that. I kind of did some design work for their house, and then I came, you know, and then kind of would commute up to LA for other projects if people needed me for like a week or something. And I had started working for an architect in 1983. So even when I was going to school, I was working for, and always working for small firms. And so I worked for, you know, this one architect kind of doing socially conscious projects. We worked on the Metropolitan Community Church, which is a project. It's a church for gay and lesbians, and also incorporated an AIDS memorial wall, because, you know, there wasn't a cure for AIDS then. And then also the place that was next door, there was an organization called Caring for Babies with AIDS that was taking a lot of babies that were born with AIDS where their parents had passed away. And so they could, it was more of like a home environment. And then if they got really sick, they would go to the hospital. So so I helped design that with this woman. And we did a lot of affordable, you know, housing in Santa Monica for the Community Corporation of Santa Monica. And that's, and then also, you know, I worked for, you know, things on the other end, the, you know, high-end custom residential for people in the entertainment industry. So...
Broad range.
And then when I was pregnant with my daughter, I was kind of wondering if, you know, I didn't I didn't know whether I wanted to put her in daycare and still work for somebody else. So I gave birth to her and I had kind of stopped working at that place. And then 3 weeks later, somebody called and asked if I wanted to do some, you know, contract work for them. And then I got other projects on my own, you know, through referrals from people. And that's just kind of the way. And then, you know, I had another child and we moved down to San Diego and another child. And then I think at that point, you're kind of like, gosh, am I really going to be able to have a firm? Like, am I really going to be able to practice architecture kind of in the traditional sense where, you know, you're putting your entire life into your firm? And, you know, I kind of said, you know what, architecture is going to be here, you know, 50 years from now. And if I take some time off or I only do a few projects a year, you know, that's going to be fine. So that's kind of how, I've been doing it for 23 years now. So.
Yeah. That's one of the wonderful things about our profession is that we can do that. That we can, you know, work for big giant firms, or we can start our own practices and have a more flexible entrepreneurial life.
Yes.
So you're a perfect example of an entrepreneur architect, sort of, you know, starting your own business and making it work. And the other thing, it was very interesting, very early in your story, you talked about the influences of school and the people around you that sort of led you towards architecture. And I just wanted to highlight that and how important it is for the profession to go that far back to educate teachers and educate guidance counselors on what architects are and what they do, and to show the possibility of people becoming architects.
Yes. I mean, I believe that that's, you know, I think that that's really important and, you know, a positive, you know, just kind of a positive experience, you know, like kind of looking at that. The other, I was also my first year at Cal Poly, I was in second year, and they have a program, it's called the Summer Intensive Orientation Program, that takes a lot of students from the area who are kind of, you know, quote unquote minority students. And, we have them for 1 week, and, you know, we stayed in the dorms, which is the only time that I had ever stayed in the dorms, and, you know, kind of gave them tastes of, you know, of architecture, landscape architecture, and urban and regional planning, and, you know, kind of open up their eyes to, you know, to careers that way. And, you know, it was really exciting because, you know, it's like, you know, you're with these, you know, kids, right? And, you know, for a week, and you're like, oh, are they going to come back here? But I think I was in my fifth year. I was in my fifth year, and there were two of the students that came up to me that had been there in that. And they said, oh, did you remember me? You know, do you remember me? And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember you, you know. So, I mean, that was exciting. So,
yeah. I just wanted to point that out. What was one big goal that you achieved in your career, and talk about how the process that you used to achieve that goal?
I think that would be, you know, getting licensed. And, you know, I mean, I don't know, when I think about it, I don't think that it's really that long of a process, but, you know, with when I actually did the math, you know, it's 6 years of school, and, you know, and I had worked for firms while I was in school. So, you know, that counted towards my work experience. And, you know, so I was able to take, you know, start taking the exam probably a year out of school. But, you know, that was back in the day. I know, I think Collier Ward said that he likes to hear all my old war stories or whatever. that was back in the day when you could only take the exam, you know, the written exam at once a year,
yeah.
You know, so everybody would kind of, you know, study and say, oh, are you going to take the exam? And then you would take the exam. I mean, where I took it in Southern California was in the Pomona Fairgrounds building, and it's these huge, this huge building, you know, and then they have all of the people who, all of the older people who started it with the lower numbers are at the front. And then they have everybody, you're in, you know, you're in numeric order. So it's like, and then the people at the end, you know, way in the back are the people that have just started out. And I can just remember, I think the only part of me that's maybe somewhat competitive, I can remember seeing the people at the beginning and I was like, I never want to be in that spot. You know, people are like, oh, did you study for it? Or you must be a good test taker. And, I'm not a good test taker, I wasn't before. I mean, I even questioned myself on those little Facebook quizzes, you know, is it orange? Is it green? And I don't know. Which did I see first? I think that it was kind of just, at Cal Poly, they kind of really encouraged people to get licensed. So it was just one of those things where, you know, everybody's like, oh, okay, are you going to study for the exam? Or, you know, of course we copied all of the old, you know, exam books and, you know, you just, I took a few days off of work to go to my parents' house to just really kind of study and then just took the whole next week and just took all the exams all in one. So I think there were 8 or 9 or something, just took them, you know, every single day you're taking exams, you take all 8 or 9 exams. The last day, Friday, I believe, was the design exam, which was the big 12-hour exam. And, you know, everybody was saying, oh, you're never, you know, I mean, just in general, like, oh, people don't pass the design exam the first time around. And, you know, so just go in and just, you know, just try to do it. And I just went in and, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I don't think that I ate anything the entire time. And at, you know, at 5:30, all you can hear is, you know, from everybody stippling. I passed it the first time. You know, I mean, it was an architect's office building in San Antonio, Texas. And I used masonry, you know, concrete block, and I put flags on the top. You just have to do it. You know, it's like, I think a lot of people, it's like, oh, I don't know, or I have to study, or, oh, I have to pass it the first time because it's so expensive. You know, you just go in and you just do it. And I think, you know, I passed half of them, including the design exam. And then the next couple years I like passed it. I think I only took one seminar. And I think that might've been on site planning. And then I was actually working at a structural engineer's office in Venice Beach. And, you know, they said, Michelle, you know, and I wasn't passing general structures. I had taken it a couple times and they said, well, you know, what was your score? And I said, I don't know. I think it's like 85 or something. And I said, okay, well, you're not missing it by very much. Cause I think passing was maybe 89 or something. And, you know, they said, we'll tutor you. And so they tutored me and, you know, I passed it the next time. And then, we have the California supplemental exam, which used to be an oral interview. So you'd have, you know, the panel of three people in front of you. And then they ask you questions for, I don't know, like you can take as long as you want to, but, I think maybe I was in there for 45, 50 minutes or something. And, you know, again, when people are waiting for like this perfect time to take the exam, it was the week after the Northridge quake.
Oh, wow.
I was 3 months pregnant and throwing up every day, at least a couple times a day. So it's like, sometimes just do it, you know, just do it and try to get it done. And again, I was sitting there waiting to go in, you know, to go upstairs in the elevator. And I'm sitting there looking and there was a woman there that was going to take it. And she had a toddler in a stroller. And again, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I hope, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Because you don't want to.
Yeah. Because I don't know whether I'll be able to do it if, you know, after right.
Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, NCARB, True Style Doors, and FreshBooks. Do you know someone in your firm who's always dreamed of getting licensed but was unable to complete the experience requirement? Well, maybe that person's you. Now you can get back on track with NCARB's new AXP portfolio. With this option, seasoned professionals can complete the Architectural Experience Program, the AXP, formerly the IDP, they've switched things up a little bit, by submitting an online portfolio. And along with meeting your state's education and examination requirements, the portfolio will help you or your employee get one step closer to becoming an architect. Learn more about the AXP portfolio at ncarb.org/entrearchitect. True Style is passionate about providing us small firm architects with the inspiration and the tools to transform our designs with the most authentic and distinctive doors available. And now we can see True Style Doors and how they worked with the National Association of Home Builders and architect Phil Keane to create a show-stopping interior door package for the 2017 new American home. To download the case study or watch a video and learn how True Style Doors can help differentiate your next project, visit entrearchitect.com/truestyle. True Style, driven by design. Visit entrearchitect.com/truestyle. So how do you get paid faster? Well, one more way is to use FreshBooks. FreshBooks is a full-function online accounting system built for us, small firm architects. We're small businesses. It includes invoices, expense management, time tracking, and so much more. It does everything I want it to do in order to get paid faster. I could send invoices efficiently on the same day. I could set up FreshBooks to automatically send reminders with the words and the timing that I want. And I can accept credit cards for payment. You should give it a try. When you're ready to give FreshBooks a try, go to freshbooks.com/architect and sign up for your free 30-day unrestricted trial and get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, more organized, and most importantly, get paid faster. freshbooks.com/architect. And don't forget to let them know that Entree Architect sent you in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That leads us right into that next question is what's a struggle that you experienced? Certainly that would have been a struggle, you know, taking that final exam there. But what is the struggle that you experienced and how did you overcome that struggle?
I think it's the struggle that I still have, and that is that I never passed college algebra, so I officially do not have my architecture degree. And I still, you know, I still struggle with that. I did try to take it last year, and it's the same course, but they now teach it from a pre-calculus book, and it's a lot more difficult to go back after that. So I dropped it halfway through the semester. That's not something I'm proud of. But and I think the other one is kind of, you know, kind of finding a way to be, you know, an architect and a stay-at-home mom, because when I was, you know, when I was in LA, you know, after I had my daughter, I can remember being at an opening and a guy said to me, like, oh, you know, what do you do? And I said, oh, I'm an architect, but, you know, I'm like raising my daughter right now, so I'm really only doing it part time. And he said, I could never do that.
Be a part-time architect or
exactly. Yes, he could never do that, and he could probably never breastfeed either.
Yeah, but I'm sure he couldn't.
But I'm just saying that, you know, it's like there's more than one way to practice architecture.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And I think that, you know, it probably took me a while to be, you know, more confident in that. But I think that that's something that maybe comes with age and more acceptance from the profession.
That's also, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to create this series is to let architects tell their story so we can all recognize that we're not alone. You know, that not only are we not alone as individual architects, but our stories are so similar very often that many of us are struggling with the things that you're struggling with. And so thanks for sharing that and being so honest with that. What about, an aha moment, that moment where you discovered something and it sort of changed the way you look at what you're doing? And how did you turn that aha moment into success for your career?
I think that aha moment probably happened when my youngest was three, and I had gotten a project, and it was a project that I was really excited about, and that's the project that I have. That's it's a Point Loma house, and it's kind of on, you know, it's on a hillside, and, you know, he said, "Oh, I want glass everywhere." And this is probably in 2003. Yeah, 2003, because my third was born in 2000. So this is like 2003. And kind of before that, it's like I would kind of do projects. But, you know, I mean, this was kind of a chance to be like, wow, you know. And I said, oh, well, let's, you know, and then I kind of talked with the structural engineer because I do, you know, I did work for a structural engineer's office. Like, I'm, you know, maybe I'm a little bit, you know, more in touch with structure than maybe somebody that has. I drafted a lot of the projects for, you know, a lot of kind of the trendy architects on the west side of Los Angeles in the, you know, 90s. So, I really felt like, wow, I'm going to do this project, and then seeing it built and, you know, and then I was like, wow, I can be, you know, I can be a woman and I can be a wife and I can be a mother and I can have my own firm and, you know, and just be me and, you know, and it'll be fine, you know? So I think that was kind of like the aha moment. So
I love that answer. I love that answer because I think, you know, not only women, I think men struggle with that too. Men who want to be, very involved in their families. That's how I am. That's why we started our firm, is so we can be part of our families and sort of integrate our lives. And I think very often, both men and women sort of struggle with that and don't always feel like it's okay. And then at some point, something clicks, like what you're talking about, your aha moment, is that it clicked in your head that it is okay. We can do this all. We can be a mom, and we can, you know, run to school when we need to, and be a professional and create that amazing piece of architecture. And that's the choice that we make. And certainly there are sacrifices that come with that lifestyle. But there are so many benefits to a lifestyle like that as well. So that's a great, great aha moment. What's one thing that has you most excited about your business today?
I think that, you know, I mean, there's a, I think that everybody has a lot of work right now. So I think that's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
I think it's always exciting when you've got work. And then I'm like doing, you know, another project that I think, like, design wise, I'm probably as, you know, pretty excited about it. Like the Point Loma house, you know, it's like, you really don't have, you know, I'm, you know, the clients are, you know, it's like they said, oh, we want, you know, we want something modern. We want something, you know, this, but then there were also all of these restrictions with the planning code for the Sea of Coronado. So, you know, at first I was thinking like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to design everything with all these restrictions. Oh, and then they also have an art collection. And so they had to incorporate all this art on the walls, and the house is very small. So it's kind of been a really, but it's, I think it's turning out, you know, pretty good. So I think that's something that I'm excited about. And And, you know, I think that there's, you know, some other projects in the works. So,
yeah, that's exciting. All right. So let's get into some quick questions. I have a list of quick questions that I have for you. And these can be, you know, brief answers. You don't have to get too deep into them, but just, we'll go through these and see how it goes. At what age did you decide to become an architect?
Like 12.
Other than architecture, what makes you happy?
Oh, my family. That's an easy one. My family. I mean, as much as like sometimes, you know, when you're trying to get something out and the kids are like, you know, asking questions. I mean, even now they're 16, 18 and 22 and there's still like something like, oh, I need this or, oh, you know, but I just really enjoy them. I mean, we're a creative family and it can be really fun. So
what's the best advice you've ever received?
This is kind of funny because I thought that maybe the best advice was no advice that I got from them.
Explain that.
The best advice I got from my grandparents and my parents, I think, is that, you know, when I said that I wanted to be an architect, nobody in my family ever said like, oh, you can't be an architect, or, you know, you're not good at math, or nobody ever said that in my family. And, yeah. And, you know, and that, and I've seen kind of, you know, I've seen some other, you know, family situations where I think, you know, like they're kind of like shut down that way. And with me, you know, I don't, you know, they never told me that I couldn't do anything. and I mean, my, you know, I had kind of, you know, my grandfather was a teamster. He had, you know, he was a crane operator and then like a union rep on the job site. And then my, you know, my other grandfather was in construction. You know, my dad had like worked for, you know, my dad could draft. He had been an engineering major and then dropped out of school. But, and then my stepdad was a design engineer. So it's kind of, you know, my mom was always encouraging and said, you know, get, you know, that you should get a degree, but she never said, you know, get a degree, like what I should get it in, or, you know, she just said like, you know, you should get a college degree. And, you know, when I said, you know, and my grandmother, you know, she was living with us when I was at community college, and, you know, I mean, I was living there and she saw how hard I was working, and, you know, they never said like, oh, why are you sure you want to do this? Or, you know, oh, you can't do this because you're a woman. And I mean, other people in other families, like that's, you know, that's what they go through. And, you know, really it's like, I was kind of, you know, my mom's side of the family, there were a lot of women who had, you know, who were born like the late 1800s. You know, my grandmother was born in 1905, and they were very progressive. You know, I mean, you know, half of them had gone to college and, you know, like pursuing like a medical degree, and they were just kind of very, I guess, progressive for the time. So I never heard, you know, I had these older aunts in the family and these great aunts, and they never said, oh, you can't do architecture. It's very good. I mean, that's the best advice.
Yeah. I love that. So your best advice was no advice. That it was support. It was, you know, that
yes.
here was what
yes.
you wanted to do. And they're like, okay, let's figure out how to do that.
Yeah. So yeah, that's exactly.
Great.
Yeah.
What about one personal habit that contributes to your success?
This was funny because I asked my daughter, because you said personal habit and I didn't know like what exactly you meant by personal habit. I said maybe coffee in the morning and coffee like several times during the day. But, you know, my daughter was like, oh, you have peanut butter toast or bagel in the morning. And then what did she say? Oh, saying everyone's first and last name.
That was good.
She said, when I tell a story or something, I'm always using the person's first and last name for some reason. I don't know. And doing everything myself is one of the things that she said, which that's not really something that I want to do. But and oh, I put loving intensely.
That's a good one. That's a good one. And the peanut butter toast, I think, is good too.
Yeah.
What about an app or an internet resource that you would recommend?
Entree Architect, right?
All right. I like that.
Yeah.
I'll take that. What about a book? A book that you would recommend and why?
Oh, and anybody from hashtag Architalks. Like, I like the, you know, Arcaspeak. Of course, you know, Bob. I mean, I would have never, you know, had I not made some, you know, smart-ass comment on Bob's.
You have to be careful being a smart-ass on Bob's blog.
I know. You know, and then I got an email from him saying, like, okay, you know, I think it was something about women in architecture. And I think it was something that Rosa had, like, that she had published. And then I'd made some comment to Bob about it. And then he said, so do you want to blog, you know? And I said, sure. I had never blogged before. You know, I had actually started that blog like a few years before, but I'd never written anything on it. So this was a way for me really to start, you know, actually writing. And that's what makes me write every month, like giving a deadline and everything. So I think that's been a great thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great one. And anybody who's interested in the Architalk series, they can go to pretty much any social media and search hashtag Architalks, and you'll find everybody's link. And every post that's an Architalks post, at the bottom, everybody shares everybody else's post. So once you find one, you'll be able to read all of them for that series. And it's a series that happens every month, originally organized by Bob Werson over at lifeofanarchitect.com. What about a recommended book, and why?
You know, I would love to give some esoteric book, but I besides like Dr. Seuss or something like that, but yeah.
That's a good one.
Any Dr. Seuss book. But you know, I was thinking, A Pattern Language.
Oh, a very good one. Yeah.
Yeah, by Christopher Alexander. I just think that it's just, I mean, you can read small pieces of it, you know, and it was given to me by a friend. It was just supposed to, there you go.
I have it right behind me, within arm's reach.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And it was given to me by a friend who, you know, who passed away a couple years after he'd actually loaned it to me, and I still have it.
What's one thing an entrepreneur architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow? So that's sort of an idea of something that somebody can execute very quickly and see a result happen in the short term.
I think the blogs have really been, I mean, I was kind of amazed by how many hits I've had on the blog. And, you know, I mean, I can always refer clients to that. And, you know, I think it's just a great experience. I mean, it's good for everybody, you know, because we do have like this, you know, this common, you know, commonality, you know, and experiences, and, you know, I just think it's a good way to, you know, to learn about architecture and kind of express yourself. And, you know, then you can refer clients to it and, you know, they can kind of look around, because I just think that, you know, a lot of people, I mean, our clientele, they don't really know what an architect does. You know, they'll say, oh, you draw blueprints, right?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and, I think another thing is to talk to people in the public. Like, I was at a tile showroom, you know, I was there 2 days in a row, and both times, you know, there were people there that were trying to pick up tile. And then I was talking with the salesperson that I usually, and they said, oh, well, so do you do this? You know, do you this? And I said, oh, well, I'm an architect. And they said, well, I didn't know architects picked out the tile. And I said, oh, yeah. And I said, well, you know, I'm like do residential art. And then I told them that. And, you know, so it's like I still pass out my card. I think that, you know, just getting your name out there and talking to people, you know, about architecture and, you know, and what architects do.
Yeah. If anybody is interested in the Architalks series, they can go to Life of an Architect and send Bob an email. And if you wanted to write as part of that series, Bob will put you on the list, and you'll get all the notification and you could be part of it too. I think that's a great suggestion. Let's wrap things up with one parting piece of guidance, and then how best to connect with you.
Okay. I think people should just be real. I mean, you know, you kind of touched on it, and I think that you know, that especially for residential architecture, I think that, you know, people will relate to you if you're just, you know, who you are. You know, I mean, they're going to have their kids, you know, that, you know, you've got your kids or something, you know, relating to that. One of the people that's an administrator at one of the local architecture schools was saying, oh, you're my favorite woman architect because you're real.
That doesn't say much for other women architects.
I don't know. And so I think, you know, just be real. And I also think that that, you know, you should be yourself, and also, you know, be empathetic. I mean, I think one of the things Paul Goldberger actually said something about, like, how, you know, architects should be involved in, you know, in social issues. And, you know, like there were a bunch of people that said architects don't need to be involved in social issues, you know, da 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 da, you know, and I'm like, well, you know, we're designing spaces for people, you know, which is a social issue.
Right. Exactly.
So I think that if I think some of the people are saying, oh, architecture school doesn't prepare you for that, or, you know, it doesn't do that. But, you know, I mean, I think it should. And I think that there are schools out there that are kind of really, you know, really focusing on, you know, certain areas. Like, I know, you know, Cal Poly, we used to have to go in fourth year, they used to have to go down to areas, you know, like Watts, and, you know, it would be, you know, kind of like redesigning the area. And, you know, in second year at Cal Poly, you know, we had a project that we had to design a toy for, it used to be called Lanterman Institute. They don't even have it anymore, but it was a place for people who were mentally disabled. And so, you know, we would given a project and we would, you know, design a toy, and then they would come to the school and, you know, we could give them the toy. And, you know, I think projects like that are really good. And I think that they're really needed. And, you know, it's all about, you know, who your client is and designing something for your client.
What's the best way for listeners to connect with you if they wanted to reach out and thank you for sharing your knowledge today?
They can always go on my blog, or they can reach me at my email address, which is mghottelarc@gmail.com.
Michelle, thank you very much for joining me here today and for sharing your knowledge here at Andre Architect Podcast.
Thank you so much, Mark.
If you liked what we shared today, complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode163. And if you want to be a guest here at Andre Architect Podcast as a featured entrepreneur architect, connect with us anywhere on social media. Just reach out to us or send an email directly to me at podcast@entrearchitect.com. We want to help you share your story. podcast@entrearchitect.com, and just send us a request that you want to be featured on the Entrepreneur Architect series here at Entre Architect Podcast. And don't forget to visit the website at entrearchitect.com/free course and pick up your free course, Profit for Small Firm Architects. entrearchitect.com/free course will get you there, and it will teach you how to build a powerful profit plan that'll work for your small firm. My name is Mark Arlepage. I'm hoping that you like this new series. I want you to share your knowledge, so send me an email. Let me know. I'm an entrepreneur architect. I want you to share your knowledge, and I encourage you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short haul, frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.